Hey, welcome to another edition of Rockin' Retirement, busier than ever and on a mission. I'm Walter Storholt alongside Janine Theus, and on today's episode, we're talking about the future of retirement in America. Is the glass half full or is the glass half empty? Are we on the brink of a retirement renaissance or are stormy seas ahead? We're going to talk all about it on today's episode, see if Janine is optimistic or pessimistic about certain planning topics, advice, and guidance. So check it all out. We're going to be talking about Social Security, healthcare affordability, tax rates in the next decade, and long-term care, plus more. It's all on the way on today's episode. Let's get started. Well, Janine, welcome to another episode. How have you been?
Hey, Walter, doing good. Got to see the grandbaby recently. And, you know, they're
very nice.
They're all so cute. We have, like a year, 14, 15 months, you know, they're walking around hollering at you, you know, babbling. And it's just, it's really cute. They're all awesome. So, yeah.
You've had enough time with the grandbabies now to like compare them to having kids. So how much better is being a grandparent versus an actual parent?
Well, you can walk away. You can give them back.
they're temporary in small pieces, right?
It's small, yeah. But you know, I mean, it's just as wonderful. Some people say it's amazing because you can give them back when they get cranky, but I very much remember those days, you know, of being a little overwhelmed because I had four kids in 5.5 years. So I remember that, but, it is really, it's just a joy. I think the hard thing for a lot of grandparents is to let your kids make their own mistakes.
As the parents, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Where's that line of when you chime in or when you discipline the way you think, you know, you could be helpful, but at the same time, not overstep your boundaries and those kinds of things.
Yeah. Especially, you know, with daughters-in-law, it's a tough for a lot of women to like, okay, I'm going to back off right now.
That's a good point. It's one thing to tell one of your sons like, hey, listen up, we should do
get
it this
here.
Way. But the daughter-in-law might be a different story.
Yeah, exactly. So I have to be really, you know, careful. I'm always tactful, but
yeah.
You know, and I mean, she's a smart lady. I mean, they're smart people. And it's just, you just have to let them learn.
For sure. And, for sure. Know,
and lead by example.
That's right. We'll have to do a grandkids edition of the show sometime. So next time they're visiting, we'll record a show and you can have them up on camera and ask them questions and I will make a whole bit out of it.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it's actually interesting that you talked about the grandkids today because it kind of fits in with our topic. We're talking about the future of America and, you know, the children are our future, right? And
yeah.
And you want to build a good future for not only your kids, but your grandkids. And there's a lot to talk about, obviously global stuff going on right now from conflict in the Middle East and just we have an election year coming up. There's going to be a lot of turmoil. There's a lot of pessimism out there about those kinds of items. We'll narrow our focus a little bit today to talk about more specifically the financial elements that are important in all of this. But yeah, glass half full, half empty. Before we dive into the specific financial pieces, just, I don't know, if somebody were to ask you today, Janine, I guess I'm doing that. Do you have this glass half full or half empty approach to, I guess, life in America in general?
You know, it's really a tough question because I'm looking at it from a different perspective than some people just because of my background. But I think in general, I'm seeing a great awakening to a lot of things that have been going on for years. So people are starting to actually pay attention, which is a good thing. So I think I'm a glass half full, but it's going to take a lot of work.
I thought you would be.
It's going to take a lot of work because it's not something you can, let's just put it out there. I don't trust the government. And when somebody says, oh my gosh, you don't trust the government. I'm like, well, who is the government? There are a bunch of bureaucrats. Okay. How many of you have worked in the government or worked for the government or, you know, things like that? You know, it's all comes down to individuals and policies, et cetera. And sometimes policies are not good for the average citizen. Mm. And we can go back years and show that. Or,
yeah,
you know, best laid plans don't always turn out to be best. I'm half full because I think there are a lot of people that are paying attention, getting involved and saying, we don't like this. We need to change this. And especially where children are concerned, because that is the future. So how do we want the future to look? You know, what are we going to put in place, leave in place or promote so that, you know, your generation can thrive and your kids' generation can thrive?
Yeah,
people need to understand that skin in the game is really important.
Well, and that's important because you talk about the government. Well, they're also the ones making the rules for our retirement and in control of a lot of those elements of retirement planning. So let's jump in there, Janine, and tap into your 20 plus years as a financial planner, but also with that knowledge that you worked for the government for 20 plus years as a naval intelligence officer. And these two worlds can collide a little bit on today's show. Yeah. All right. So give us your verdict on the stability of Social Security. Anybody prepping for retirement certainly has heard concerns over the years about Social Security. There's lots of opinions of if it's going to last, if it's not going to be there for various groups. So what's your opinion on a half full or half empty approach to Social Security?
Well, I'm half full because essentially Social Security is a pay-as-you-go system. If you take a look at your paycheck and the taxes that are withheld, you're paying FICA.
Yeah.
So, you know, people are paying into the system. So it was actually overfunded until about 2021. And then we started taking out more than was going in. So what has Congress done is change the wage base on which they tax. So I'm sure you've heard tax the rich, which is nonsense because who is the rich? People making more than $200,000 a year, honestly, would be considered rich when you look at median incomes in the United States. So it's just that more of that income is going to be taxable going to Social Security and Medicare, et cetera. So Social Security, you know, is trillions of dollars. It's not going to go bankrupt. It may, and because I've heard the word insolvent used, it's not going to be insolvent either. But about 2033, somewhere between 33 and 35, supposedly it's going to run out of money. Well, it's all government funded. It's all taxpayer funded. So unless we're running out of taxpayers, you know, I don't think we're going to necessarily go bankrupt. You know, so they may change how they pay out.
Okay.
There's a projection that maybe in 2035, they're going to start paying out 3/4 of the benefit. So if that's the case, and if you think that's going to happen, then you should start planning to not rely solely on Social Security. The difficulty is a third of the population will be on Social Security. Right now, we're at the back end of the baby boomer group, 12,000 people turning 65 every day. So there's a huge amount of people that will be drawing from Social Security. What are they going to do? You're going to have to broaden the tax base. So, you know, they'll figure it out. There's not necessarily a trust fund. There's just an appropriation, if you will. And of the, you know, part of the budget that goes to Social Security, Medicare, all these other things, it's 24% of the budget goes to Social Security and Medicare. So it's a pretty large percentage. So obviously we need more revenue coming to the government. And I know it's counterintuitive, but when we cut taxes, there's more revenue that comes into the government. Because people are willing to go out, invest, start businesses, and create more more income, revenue. So it's really interesting.
It comes down to kind of how close you are to retirement then as to whether you're more optimistic about it or not?
Yeah, I think that's the case because more and more people are starting to draw from Social Security. You know, whether or not to take early or take at 70, it's really interesting because there's a debate going on in an advisors group I'm in that it's interesting. More of us think that depending on the amount of savings that someone has, that they should take when their full benefit age happens. So 66 or 66 and change or 67, when the full benefit age, which Social Security used to call full retirement age, but that confuses people. But you should take at that age rather than wait till 70 if you have significant savings.
Okay.
So if you don't have significant savings, then the reason to wait is that the surviving spouse will have a higher Social Security benefit for the survivor. So, you know, it's really important to build all these factors into your retirement planning. But, you know, I think that it's going to be around because it is the largest, you know, pot of money that people are relying on for retirement, even though it was never intended to be a retirement system. So yeah, there are going to be some challenges. Congress has to get involved and deal with this. If they deal negatively with this, they're going to hear about it in spades because so many people are recipients.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the big problem. You hear a lot of noise whenever Social Security is mentioned. That is for sure. Let's talk about healthcare affordability in the future, Janine, and what your outlook is on that. Do you think that's going to get any better than it currently is, or are you pretty pessimistic on that side?
Well, there are some significant challenges with healthcare in general. I mean, there's huge advances in treatments, technology. I was just reading up yesterday about artificial discs and how they work and, you know, between cervical and lumbar. And I mean, you have more load bearing in lumbar. So that's a little bit of a different challenge than doing cervical, but it's a pretty phenomenal idea. And apparently it's been very successful in some individuals. Healthcare, I think what's needs to change in our country is that there's too much control being exerted by the insurance companies and big pharma. So that's affecting what we sometimes have access to in terms of information and even treatments. And so, you know, not to get political, but there's a little bit of a cabal that's basically influencing medical care and the decisions between or the relationship between doctor and patient. So I think that needs to change. And it's more people getting involved and leaning on Congress a little more, I think, or their legislators to deal with some of that. But the advances in technology and potential cures is pretty phenomenal. And, you know, and learning to use some of the meds that we, you know, that were used for something over here and discovering that, oh, hey, this works really great against cancer. So there's some of that that is starting to happen. And I think that's a great thing as people become more aware of what is possible.
Yeah. Seems like this one goes hand in hand, right? Like the more optimistic you are about the future, the less you can be optimistic about its affordability, right? Like we're going to make it so that we can live longer, but by living longer, we're going to have to keep fixing more and more issues. And so that higher need drives up the costs of things. And so it kind of is this vicious circle maybe in some ways.
Well, it is. It is. The other thing, too, is what's the emphasis and why the emphasis? I mean, there's a terrific, not to send everybody out to listen to another podcast, but I'm sure a lot of people have heard of Joe Rogan and his interview with Dr. John Abramson, which is really an eye opener about medical care in general, but and the cost of care. And what's really, really interesting is I think more and more people are starting to understand, but it's difficult to get through some of the layers when we're the only country in the world that allows big pharma to advertise drugs on TV as much as they do. So that for some people is going to slant how they view medicine or what medicine should be able to do for you. When all, for instance, diabetes, especially type 2, which is adult onset diabetes, Dr. Abramson states pretty unequivocally that the best study that's ever been done on diabetes shows that proper diet and exercise is more successful at controlling diabetes than drugs. You know, more people
drug need companies to start, aren't going to want you to know that though, right?
Exactly. So more people have to are starting to wake up, starting to take care of themselves a little better, or they need to, for sure. But because healthcare costs are only going to go up if it's controlled by big whatever.
Right.
Because they drive that, you know, and then what we have access to. So that's the half empty part. The half full part is there's more that we can do because the technology is, even in the last 5 years, has changed significantly. So, you know, that's pretty astounding.
Definition of a double-edged sword there for sure. let's talk about our third topic, tax rates. So this is right in your wheelhouse to get into the tax conversation. Let's limit the scope to the next decade. Let's try not to project or even kind of try to comprehend what things might be 20 or 30 years from now. But let's just look at that next decade. So in particular, a really important conversation for anybody who's nearing retirement to kind of know what those rates are going to look like in the near to midterm.
Okay, so the near term is the current tax code is due to sunset in 2025.
Yeah, which is so coming up now. It was a long way off for a little while, but now it's coming up.
Yeah, and so that's what's been really interesting about, you know, when you actually get people to sit down and just look at the tax brackets, what happens when the tax code changes. And the 2017 tax code change put in place under the Trump administration is the lowest tax bracketology we've ever had. And so what's going to happen if Congress doesn't extend this, or even if they modify it slightly, is it's going to revert back to pre-2017, which means two more brackets, and the brackets are narrower, which means you're going to fall into a higher bracket, especially those people that have significant savings and qualified money. So if you're in retirement and you have to start doing RMDs, required minimum distributions, it's more money you're having to take out, and it's going to fall. It may push you into a higher tax bracket, you know, with the new tax changes. So from that standpoint, I mean, everybody talks about the debt, which is interesting, but 2/3 of the debt is owned by the United States, is owned by us in treasury bills, bonds, and notes. So a lot of people don't realize
that. We own a lot of our own debt.
We own a lot of our own debt. And then a big portion of the remaining 24%, about half of that, is intergovernmental debt, because they're borrowing from each other. So right. It's a real interesting situation. And then you've got the rest that are owned by foreign countries. And interestingly enough, Japan owns more of our debt than China. Hmm. So, and I don't think Japan's going to go anywhere. I mean, they're our friends.
they're having their own struggles about things, but
not going
anytime soon.
But, you know, in general, so when you say, oh, we have to tax more to relieve the debt, that is not necessarily the case. The government, it doesn't matter what the tax brackets are. I mean, that's how they'll tax you more, is raise taxes, is change the tax brackets. And then what they decide to tax in other areas. So, you know, short term, something has to be decided on the current tax code. I have a feeling Congress is going to extend it. Mm-hmm. Because more money than ever has poured into the government coffers since this tax code was implemented. So it's going to be really interesting to see, because I don't buy that, oh, we have a huge debt, so we have to raise taxes. Well, the way to get more revenue is, like I said previously, is drop the tax rates, because then more people across the board are paying their fair share.
Great point. So sounds like you're actually optimistic on tax rates in the future.
Because they're going to have, I mean, it's, you know, 2024 is an election year. Nobody wants to raise taxes in an election year. So I think that there's going to be more pressure put on some decision. You know, unfortunately, I don't think we always have the smartest people. In the front office.
Making these choices. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you know, that's why people need to get involved locally. Because when people move state to state, I mean, state taxes, every state gets their taxes in some manner, either it's sales tax, property tax, different fees.
Yeah.
They don't have an income tax, or there's some blend.
I just registered our two vehicles out here in Colorado, Janine. And it's a different story registering a car here versus back in North Carolina, as an example. the price difference in car registration is quite dramatic. So they're going to get you in some way or another. They're going to get your dollars.
Yep. I mean, and so then the question is, you know, and this is always the question, what are they doing with your money? Where does the money go? And that's why people need to be a little more involved or paying attention or aware of what's happening locally.
So optimistic that the lower rates might continue for a little while, but still a lot to be concerned with, pessimistic about on that equation too. So
yeah,
sounds like there's a little bit of both in all these, and that's totally fine. let's talk specifically about baby boomers now and look at their long-term care options. What's the half full and half empty view of that situation for baby boomers?
So the half empty, let's start with that. The half empty is you've got more, I think the statistic is 75% of the people over 65 are going to need some type of care at some point. So whether that's just assisted care, in-home care, or full facility care, you know, is going to depend on obviously the health of the individual and whatever happens, you know, going forward from 65. What's interesting is that and what I tell folks, especially when they're in their early 60s, is, you know, anything can happen. I've lost four clients at early ages, two at 62, two at 64. Retired, moved to a different state, you know, comes down to stage four cancer. This stuff can happen, and then that changes your whole retirement planning situation. But long-term planning, you know, you can live for a long time on and have Alzheimer's. That's a different kind of care. Memory care is very different from just assisted living. So people need to start really having these more in-depth conversations with family members, especially. But if you don't have immediate family, if you don't have children, you really should be looking at who's going to be your best advocate for healthcare matters, because long-term care is inevitable at some point for people. And then not enough people are really prepared for that. And a lot of, interestingly, I was reading something that a lot of advisors don't like talking about it because it's a tough subject.
Yeah, it is.
For people.
It's hard for people to talk about it one-on-one, let alone now involving a third party, right?
Well, and nobody wants, and most, everybody says, I don't want to be a burden to my family. Well, if you don't plan it, you're probably going to be a burden.
Right. You can be a less of a burden if that's how you're viewing it than by planning in advance. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I've got people who say, I'm just going to walk off into the woods. And I'm like, I don't think that's going to work.
No, doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
I've been watching it, unfortunately, play out. My grandmother is going through this whole transition over the last several months, over the last year or so. And it's a tough situation. It's not fun for anybody. But, you know, I think she's seeing, hopefully, at least, like, the family is there to support. Everyone's viewing it as an opportunity to continue to, you know, love on her. And she gets to interact with the grandbabies a little bit, you know, a little bit more. And she's actually living a better life than when she was at home. But, yeah, it's come with complications. It's been difficult. And the conversations have been tough. But, you know, there's some positivity there in that there's friendship, there's good square meals every day, there's support to try and make some of this life a little bit easier to go through that.
Yeah, and some of the challenge, I guess this is the glass half empty piece, is there are more and more continuing care retirement communities, CCRCs, being built. Mm-hmm. But you really do have to do your due diligence if you're going to put somebody there. My mother is absolutely terrified, will not go to one. She wants to stay in her home. Well, it's starting to get more difficult for them to be there. My dad could not live by himself. He would forget to eat.
Yeah.
You know, or forget where he is half the time. So, you know, it's just, that's the reality. And we really do need to have this conversation intergenerationally. And then what, as a society, are we putting in place to keep these people safe and content and happy? I mean, as a family member, you need to be involved in some of that decision, because some of these people just don't want to go to these homes.
It's hard enough to go through with full family support. I can't imagine somebody going through it alone and all of the dangers and complications that come along with that. So yeah, planning, especially if you're alone, you've got to have a plan for long-term care.
Yeah,
your outlook will not be half full if you're solo making it through this with no plan in place. Yeah,
that is exactly right. That is exactly right.
Very good. So, well, let's end it with a big one here, Janine, the stock market. let's have a little fun at the end of the show here. Let's look at the scope of the next 5 to 10 years of the stock market. Get out your crystal ball. what's a half empty and a half full scenario in the stock market look like?
Well, the half empty is always that everybody, a lot of people tend to deal with the immediate. So the market has been ridiculous, was ridiculous last year. There was the only positive asset class was cash, which is
not
like
good.
What? Yeah. And then this year the asset classes have done better. But for instance, the S&P 5 was up 17% as of the 1st of August. And now it's down to, I don't know, less than 10. So it's been squirrely. You know, the war in the Middle East or the, you know, the conflagration is not helping the market because there's a lot, there are a lot of unknowns. There's also indecision in policies from the front office here. And so when there's this much, I think, unknown territory, the market's looking for a place to land. And so there isn't a place because they're not getting a clear direction. And everything, you know, prices, et cetera, are baked into what we know at the time. So it's been pretty volatile, which is very unsettling for folks. Now, if you look down the road and you consider it historically, you know, over periods of time, the market is 100% positive. So if you do rolling 20-year periods, it's 100% positive. It's just what we're going through this year when it really should have been positive historically compared to last year. So we're technically positive this year. It just doesn't feel like it
though. Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it. So, and that's just,
and that's why I guess that 5-year period, you know, even if you stretch it to 10, that's why that can be so tough to nail. Right.
Right. Right. And even if, you know, so if you go back 5 years, well, we've had 2018 was a negative year. 2019, 20 turned to positive. So 19, 20, 21 were positive. There's three positive years. 22 was very negative. This year, we're not sure. The jury's out.
That's a good example of how you could have absolutely incredible years in the market, like some of the best of all time. But if your horizon was 5 years, well, it only takes one bad year to bring you right back down to earth. And
that's right.
And vice versa, right? You could be in the doldrums and it only takes one good year to pull you back out of it.
And that's so being in the market for the long term and understanding actually how the market works and being properly allocated is so important. Last year, I must have seen a dozen articles on the 60-40 portfolio being dead. This year, I've seen half a dozen articles that say, oh, wait, it's back. And it's still, still a good thing. I'm like, you guys just lie all the time.
Yeah.
Well, and it's all, it's misdirection or redirection. Mm-hmm. And so proper allocation, staying disciplined, you know, that's the value we provide is we rebalance back to targets and keep people disciplined because it's when you panic and have knee-jerk reactions and you start touching the portfolio because, you know, the market's doing this, I got to do this, or I have to chase, that you end up hurting yourself.
That's where you're losing money.
That's where you're losing.
When you do those things. Okay. Well, very interesting, Janine. Great breakdown on everything today. If somebody's got questions about something we talked about today, or they want to dive into their particular financial situation as a great advisor helping folks out for the past two decades to get to retirement and through all its complications, tell us a little bit about Theus Wealth Advisors and just how you help folks on a daily basis.
Well, a big part of what I see is the value that we provide is the sounding board. We, you know, I did have a client say to me, what I love about you is your message never changes. And that's because I said, because the research is the research. And then keeping people disciplined and on task is really my job. And to help be that sounding board for when you have other financial questions that come up that, you know, because everybody has a lot of financial types of decisions they have to make. So. Yeah. You know, coordinating those decisions with the overall plan is really important. And then for those that are in retirement, it's keeping people disciplined so they don't panic when we have these terrible years and not trying to, you know, outguess ourselves, let alone outguess the market. And then, you know, helping people decide what's the purpose for the money. And then how do I want this to play out over the years? So that's what we do. I mean, I think it's more on a personal level. It's not transactional. It's very much, you know, what are you trying to accomplish? What does this money mean to you? What do you want it to mean to your heirs if you do? And how do we do that? So. Yeah.
Great breakdown. Who would have known that in a topsy-turvy world, having someone who can be consistent on something would be valued by folks? How about that?
Yeah.
It's magic. Well, that's great. If you want a consistent approach to financial retirement planning and to put yourself in a better position to succeed when it comes to your retirement years, get a plan in place. And you can do that with Janine Theus and the team at Theus Wealth Advisors. The number to call to get in touch is 443-718-6311. You can also go online to TheusWealthAdvisors.com. And whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on your favorite podcasting app, we're going to link to that contact info in the description of today's show so you can find it very easily. Janine, thanks for the great optimistic, pessimistic breakdown on today's show. I'm optimistic that we're going to have another great show lined up next time around, and we'll look forward to chatting to you again soon.
That'll be great. Thanks so much, Walter.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Janine. We'll see everybody next time right back here on Rockin' Retirement, busier than ever and on a mission.
Information is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute tax, investment, or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified investment, legal, or tax professional before taking any action.